Welcome to IP Management Voice, the podcast spotlighting leading minds in IP and IP management. This series supports the IP Business Academy's call for subject matter experts to share insights, foster reflection, and strengthen the global IP system. Join the conversation via our newsletter and explore cutting-edge content on D-Plex. The content featured in this episode on continuous IP management for scale-up companies comes from Volker Tillman.
Welcome to the deep dive. If you're a founder or an executive at a scale-up, you know the feeling. You're in that thrilling but also terrifying phase of hyper-growth, pushing into new markets with investors watching every move.
And the old rules just don't apply.
Exactly. You need speed, but you also somehow need structure. So the question we're digging into today is this. What is the single most effective lever you have that directly impacts your valuation, secures partnerships, and really dictates how high you can fly?
It is, almost without fail, intellectual property. Mm-hmm. But we're not talking about IP as just a stack of legal documents.
Right.
We're talking about making it a continuous strategic function. And today, we're really focusing in on the framework from IP expert Volker Tillman, which is designed specifically for scale-ups trying to manage this exact growth stage.
Mm-hmm.
He calls it continuous IP management.
Okay, so let's unpack that. Our mission for this deep dive is to understand the fundamental mismatch that so many high-growth companies face, and then how moving to this kind of continuous, proactive IP system helps them not just survive, but thrive, especially during due diligence.
And we've got some really great European success stories to show how it's done.
Perfect. So let's start with the problem itself, this structural mismatch you mentioned.
Right. At its core, the mismatch is simple. A scale-up's technology, its products, its market reach,
yeah,
all of that is accelerating. It's exponential. But their internal ability to actually identify, protect, and enforce their IP, that's usually linear if it's growing at all.
So you're essentially driving a Formula One car, but with bicycle brakes.
That's a perfect analogy. It's a disaster waiting to happen.
And for a founder listening, what does that disaster actually look like? What are the tangible consequences of just relying on, ad hoc IP protection?
The risks are huge, and they compound so quickly. First, you've got simple know-how leakage. An engineer leaves, a contractor's agreement isn't tight enough,
mm-hmm.
and your core knowledge just walks out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Second, you miss patenting opportunities. Little process innovations in R&D that seem minor at the time can become strategically critical down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And third, and this is a big one, as you expand globally, your risk of infringing on someone else's rights just skyrockets.
And that can stop a product launch dead in its tracks.
Instantly. And trigger incredibly expensive litigation you just can't afford.
Which brings us right to Tillman's core idea. You have to move from that reactive chaos to a continuous system. What's the real mindset shift there?
Tillman is very clear on this. The system has to support growth, protect your core tech, and, maybe most importantly, create strategic optionality for the future.
Optionality meaning licensing and acquisition.
Both. Or just having the freedom to pivot. And this isn't about, hiring a 10-person legal department overnight. He defines it as an operational discipline.
An operational discipline.
Right.
So it's not a legal function.
Not primarily. The goal is to weave IP decision-making into the company's daily fabric, into its rhythms. So that protection is considered when an idea is born, not 6 months later when you're about to ship.
Okay, if it's an operational discipline, why do so many scale-ups get it wrong? Is it the cost? Or is it maybe resistance from the engineering teams who just want to build?
It's often a mix of both, but mostly it's a resistance to process and a complete misunderstanding of who should own it. Engineers see legal paperwork and they just see a roadblock.
Right. This will slow me down.
Exactly. So the continuous system addresses that head on. It defines really clear, recurring activities that are aligned with the product development cycles they're already using.
So what are those activities?
We're talking about simple, formalized ways for invention disclosure, rigorous documentation, and an evaluation of protectability based on actual patent law. And finally, the step that most people skip, assessing the business relevance.
Let's stick with that for a second, the internal coordination. If this is owned by operations, not legal, how do you actually make that happen without burying engineers in forms?
You have to assign clear process ownership. Maybe it's the head of product or the VP of R&D, someone who can champion it. And it requires really open interdisciplinary communication where legal is a strategist, a coach,
yeah,
not a gatekeeper.
So what does that look like in practice?
Some of the best examples I've seen are companies that set up, say, a monthly IP review board. It's 90 minutes. They scan the R&D pipeline, they look at the product roadmap, and they review competitor intelligence. It becomes a collaborative check-in, not some mandatory, painful sign-off.
That makes a lot of sense. And by creating that rhythm, you avoid what you call the IP gap. Can you explain what that is and what the real-world cost of that gap is?
The IP gap is that chasm that just naturally opens up. Engineering is building the tech over here. Management is selling the vision over there. And legal only gets called in when a funding round or an M&A deal is on the horizon.
And by then, it's too late.
It's often too late to fix things properly. The cost is defensibility and ultimately valuation. During due diligence, investors see that gap. They see unprotected IP, they see sloppy documentation, and they price that risk directly into their offer.
So you get more dilution.
You get more dilution, or worse, you lose a market window because a competitor filed a key patent 6 months before you even thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
Institutionalizing this early on just reduces that risk and builds a transparent foundation you need for everything that comes next.
That clarity feels like the core asset here, which moves us perfectly into our second segment.
Hey, are you an IP expert with a focused topic you want to share? Then you might be just the right fit to become an IP subject matter expert at the IP Business Academy. It's a great opportunity to build visibility for your expertise and reach new clients through a trusted academic platform. You'll be supported in creating digital content, LinkedIn strategies, and outreach to your target group. If you're ready to raise your profile and position yourself as a thought leader, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. End of advertisement.
The strategic pillars of the system. It's not just about filing patents. You have to connect them to business goals. Why do so many founders get stuck on just the cool tech, the novelty, and miss that connection?
Because that's what they love. I mean, engineers are driven by elegance and novelty.
Mm-hmm.
But investors, partners, they are driven by defensibility and market application.
And their expectations have changed.
Dramatically. Sophisticated VCs now expect founders to show a coherent IP portfolio that's directly linked to the company's value chain. They want to see more than just a few cool, isolated patents. They want to see a moat.
So how does mapping your assets create that coherent story?
The mapping is what creates the transparency. Scale-ups really need to visualize their IP in, like, three dimensions. First, which patents and trade secrets support which specific product features?
Okay.
Second, which international markets do we absolutely need to protect to support our sales goals? And third, which parts of our tech can we maybe leverage for partnerships or even license out? The map you create from that is essential, both for your internal decisions and for proving your value to outsiders.
A huge part of that external picture has to be freedom to operate analysis, FTO.
Yeah.
This becomes way more important during scaling, right? When you're suddenly competing with the big incumbents.
FTO becomes existentially important. Suddenly, you're not in a niche anymore. You're a target. A proactive, systematic FTO strategy reduces that catastrophic risk of a product launch being blocked by a competitor's patent. It forces you to find design arounds before you've spent millions on manufacturing.
So FTO has always been seen as this defensive risk mitigation thing, but you said earlier it has a dual value. How does it become market intelligence?
This is the really fascinating part. A proper FTO analysis means you are meticulously combing through your competitor's patent filings. So while you're checking for infringement risk, you're also getting a roadmap of their strategy.
You see what they're focused on.
You see their R&D focus, but more importantly, you see where they have not filed. You see the gaps, and those vacuums, those white spots in the patent landscape, reveal unprotected space for innovation.
Ah, so you can guide your own R&D to go where they aren't.
Precisely. You use their own filings to strengthen your patent position, putting your R&D dollars into defensible areas your rivals have ignored. It turns IP from a cost center into a core part of your competitive strategy.
I love that. Okay, so pillar number three, managing collaboration risks. Scale-ups live and die by their partnerships, OEMs, research institutions, joint ventures. But these can create a total mess when it comes to who owns what.
An absolute mess. Collaborations get you to market faster, but they create huge IP ownership uncertainty. The continuous system forces you to have the internal rigor and clarity before you even start negotiating.
So what are the key things you need to have sorted out internally?
You need a clear process for a few key areas.
Yeah.
First, background IP. What tech is each party bringing to the table? Second, the rules for joint development. How is ownership of new inventions shared? And third, a precise allocation of rights to any improvements that come out of the project.
And if you don't establish those structures up front,
the consequences can be devastating. I mean, you can accidentally give away future exclusive rights, lose control over your most strategic assets, or just completely dilute your technological independence. The continuous system makes sure the founder walks into that negotiation knowing exactly which assets are and are not on the table.
That's absolutely critical context. Okay, let's make this real. Let's look at how this plays out in the wild. We have some great European scale-up examples that really show how this commitment to IP transforms a company.
Absolutely. These cases all show founders who treated IP as a growth accelerator. They tied patent activities directly to their product roadmap, their business goals, and crucially, to their funding strategy. Let's start with Graphcore, the big AI hardware scale-up from the UK.
Right. Graphcore is going up against giants NVIDIA, Google, who have basically infinite resources. How on earth did IP help them compete?
Their strategy was incredibly precise. They focused their patents strategically around their core innovation, the intelligent processing units, or IPUs. They protected the architecture and their unique methods for parallel processing. It created a real technological barrier.
So the IP wasn't just an afterthought to protect the tech.
No, not at all. It became the central, most compelling argument in their financing rounds.
I see. So the patents were actually a tool to convince investors they had a defensible position against competitors worth trillions of dollars.
That's it exactly. And that defensibility is what secured them partnerships with major cloud providers. Those partners needed to know Graphcore's tech was unique and protected. They showed that a scale-up can, with systematic IP, carve out and defend a global niche.
Amazing. Okay, moving to a totally different world, medtech. Let's talk about Lumix, the Dutch company in single molecule analysis.
Lumix is a perfect case study in starting early. They protected their foundational technology from day one, with patents covering not just the core scientific methods, but also the specific commercial use cases for their tools.
And why was protecting both the method and the use case so important?
It did a couple of things. First, it locked down specific applications, which meant they controlled how their breakthroughs were commercialized. But second, that IP credibility made them a super attractive partner for top-tier research institutions. They used their patent portfolio to build scientific credibility and drive commercial growth at the same time. The brand was built on the certainty of their IP.
Okay, and our final example, let's look at green technology with Skeleton Technologies from Estonia.
Skeleton is a leader in ultracapacitors, using a proprietary curved graphene material. Their challenge was proving reliability and scale to really demanding industrial customers, like in the automotive sector.
Right, who are very risk-averse.
Extremely. So their continuous IP approach was methodical. They protected the material science, the unique graphene structure itself, and the specialized manufacturing methods needed to make it at scale.
So how did aligning the patents with materials and manufacturing help them land those big contracts?
That clarity was everything. By aligning their patent portfolio directly with their high-value product lines, they could go to an automotive company and prove, beyond a doubt, that their supply chain and technology were exclusive and defensible. That robust IP position is what carried them through multiple funding rounds and growth stages. It validates their technological maturity.
So we've covered the problem, Tillman's framework, and the proof in these case studies. It seems the main takeaway for any founder listening is that continuous IP management isn't some overwhelming burden. It's an operational discipline that you can build with manageable effort as long as you integrate it into the processes you already have.
That's the key. It's about avoiding the reactive nightmare by taking small, frequent, institutionalized actions.
Right.
And the scale-ups that do this, that adopt these kinds of structures early, they just systematically reduce their IP risk, they strengthen their story to investors, and they build a real foundation for a sustainable competitive advantage. They stop treating IP as a cost and start using it as a core function that compounds in value.
And we've established that the most successful scale-ups use their IP not just passively to defend what they have, but actively to actually shape negotiations, collaborations, and the competitive landscape.
Exactly.
So the question we want to leave you with is this. How might you rethink IP? Not as a defense mechanism or some necessary evil, but as an aggressive tool you can use to strategically guide your R&D and shape the very market you plan to dominate.
That is the mindset shift that separates the good from the truly great. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive.
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.